Dave, do you buy old houses?
I do, but somewhat reluctantly.
What scares you about them?
I am not really good at renovations. I've never flipped a house. I've done some BRRRs, but it's always been sort of hands-on where I live. Now that I'm an out-of-state investor, it just makes me nervous.
Well, I would say that probably most investors feel the way you feel about old properties.
I'm glad to hear that because we have a show lined up to help our audience understand how to not be afraid of old properties and how you can actually make a great business out of specializing in that area. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host today, Dave Meyer, joined by Henry Washington.
That's right. Today, we're talking with Lisa Moore. Lisa has been investing for 6 years, and she has really mastered the concepts of finding value add properties, knowing when to cut a property loose and monetize that property, as well as reducing her costs by retention and keeping tenants for a long period of time.
So stick around because Lisa is going to break down all of that for us today. But before we get into our interview, I want to tell you guys about a special segment that we have for you all today at the end of the episode brought to you by Deal Machine, where they're going to break down the 5 ways you can find a motivated seller. So after we talk to Lisa, make sure to stick around for that special segment. All right, let's bring on Lisa. Lisa, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me, guys.
We're very excited that you're here. Now, I understand that you've sort of developed a niche with older homes, but a lot of investors are kind of scared or wary to get into older homes. Why do you go after those?
One, they always have a uniqueness to them. We're always drawn to kind of that quirkiness of older homes. They always have a lot of character. And my husband, who I also invest with, is a GC, and he's almost always only worked on older homes. So for us, that's definitely an advantage when we're looking at properties that where a lot of people get scared of what the bones will look like. For us, it's just an opportunity and something that we enjoy doing.
Yeah, this is one of those things that, you know, I like to tell new investors is like, you really have to lean into your superpower. And a lot of people don't really know what their superpower is yet. And it takes time to kind of figure out what your superpower is. But essentially what you're saying is I have an advantage because people are scared of older homes, but I have a husband who is a GC and I live in a market where there are older homes. And so you now leverage this superpower of having someone that can A, either renovate these for you, or B, look at them and go, there is no way you should buy this one.
Yes. Right? And yeah, and even when I bought my first home before I knew him, it was an older home. Like Salt Lake definitely has a lot of older homes in it. And even then, as a single female, I still was not too worried about it. It's like, I'll figure it out. Nothing was so overwhelming or overpowering to me that I was scared of buying a home that was built in the 1930s.
The other thing, too, when you think about older homes is a lot of the times people really just are scared of what they think could happen, but they really don't know. And the key is just to understand that it's not a problem that can't be fixed. It's a problem that can be fixed with money. So when you're looking at an older property, you have to be able to evaluate it and then determine how much this problem might cost you and then get that much of a discount off of your property.
Yes. And my background is financial analysis. So I'm definitely the number side of things on the business. So yeah. So when we're analyzing a property, we are definitely being conservative on what repairs could cost. You're definitely building in more of a buffer because there's always almost going to be something that comes up with an older home. So when we're underwriting, we're just making sure that I am building in plenty of buffer and being very conservative on what our rehab costs are actually going to be.
Man, that is quite a power couple there, a financial analyst and a GC. Talking about Henry's superpowers, you both have one. That's a great place to start from. So Lisa, tell us a little bit about just your background. You invest in Salt Lake. When did you get started and what prompted you to start?
So I got started in 2017 buying my first property as a house hack. I moved to Salt Lake in 2016. I grew up in Massachusetts. And when I moved to Salt Lake, I knew that I wanted to get involved in real estate. I knew it was a great way to build wealth and I knew that it could help offset my living expenses. So when I was looking for my first property, my goal was to live for less than what I was in an apartment. And house hacking was a way to do that. So we bought the first, I bought my first property as a single female in 2017, started house hacking it by renting out a bedroom and met my husband shortly after that. And then in 2020, we really started buying and doing small multifamilies. And that was the leverage that we needed. And that gave us the cash flow for us to be able to do it full time.
That's great. And so we talked a little bit about how you're looking for older deals. And as Henry alluded to, there are older deals that have good opportunity and there are older properties that are just going to be a nightmare. So do you have a process for identifying which properties are good, have potential for value add?
Or said differently, like, is there something that you would absolutely not buy, like some feature or something in an older home?
There really isn't anything that I would say we 100% wouldn't buy. If it's to the point where we just can't get the layout to work or it's just so far gone that it's basically a teardown, that's kind of our threshold. If it gets to the point where it's like, okay, like we've walked some old houses that the foundation was crumbling, the flooring was just barely non-existent, the layout was super weird. So things like that, we definitely would not go for. But if it has a decent layout and if the bones of it are good and it's a good foundation and good structurally and we can rearrange some walls and do stuff like that, then we'll buy pretty much anything.
Well, how about the flip side of that? Are there any things that you see in a property, an old property, maybe some character or something that makes you really want to buy something?
Yeah, if we just some of the woodwork, some of the old flooring, you'll go into some old homes and they have some really cool old wood floors that look like crap when you go in there, but you know, you can refinish them and they look beautiful. And just some of them will just have different little architecture things within them, different arches or wood trim, things like that. So we definitely look for stuff like that because we can really find a way to rehab that. We always like to find something from a property and keep it just to keep that old charm with it. One of our properties had a really cool front door. It was a horrible for a front door, but we refinished it, painted it, and made it the sliding door for a bathroom. So it just has this really cool old door that we were able to refinish.
While we're on the topic of problems with properties or things that you find in properties that you either like or would not like, I want to play a little game. I'm going to say some sort of problem or nightmare feature that people seem to come up with in their heads. And then you tell me if you've bought a property that has one of these things and if you were able to overcome it and make money.
Oh, I like this game.
Okay, let's go.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. Perfect. Termites.
Yes. We actually have a property that we own that had termites.
And you still own it and everything is okay?
Yep. We just had bug people come in. They got rid of everything and then they, whatever it is they call it, they basically did a whole treatment around our property and now they come every month to maintain it and make sure it stays good and haven't had an issue since.
Perfect. Knob and tube electrical.
Ooh, that was going to be mine.
I knew that was going to be one of them. The first house I bought still had live knob and tube.
Live?
And live.
I've never seen live knob and tube.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I've seen it in the house, but not live.
Yes. So I got a quote from an electric company and they came in and they replaced all the live knob and tube and we were good to go. It was built. We made sure I had that quoted before we closed. So I knew how much it was going to cost.
Boilers.
No, not yet.
Okay. And so for those who don't know, sometimes these older homes are heated with boiling systems and they don't really make them anymore. So you either have to either keep it or completely replace it. Dave, do you have any you want to talk about?
Yeah. Foundation issues.
Yes and no. So one of our properties actually, the foundation does not look pretty. So when we went to sell it, people had a, you know, very concern with it, but we had somebody come in and test it, and do whatever they had to do and got the all clear. And we do have another property that we had to put, like the jacks underneath. So we had to pour a little cement pad and put some jacks in and that took care of the footings and that took care of the problem.
Septic tanks.
No.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, haven't had a septic tank yet.
So septic tanks, for those who don't know, this is typically a property when you have to get rid of the human waste. It can either go through a city sewer or there's a septic tanks that sometimes go in the ground and they can get old and need to be replaced and can be costly. I know it, and it's regional, I think, where a lot of these things happen. So we have a lot of septic tanks out where I live.
Yeah, I grew up in Massachusetts and we had a septic tank growing up, and the more rural areas tend to have septic tanks.
And they can be very expensive to fix or replace.
Yes.
All right, we got to take a short break, but right after that, we're going to hear about one of Lisa's deals that didn't go so well. Stick around.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today.
Welcome back, investors. Let's pick up where we left off.
So Lisa, it sounds like you have a lot of experience with difficult rehabs, and it sounds like a lot of them have gone well, but I understand you did a deal recently that didn't go as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, that was last year. We bought a duplex. One of the things that we loved about the property was it was actually two separate buildings. So there was a front house, and then they had a garage that they had converted. And we built in $90,000 to $100,000 for rehab because the front house was barely livable. The fact that people were living there was atrocious. But, and that was the property, you know, as we started pulling up the floors, we got to the subfloor and we're like, okay, good. After pulling off like two or three layers. Well, that wasn't the bottom subfloor. They had three layers of subfloor. So we ended up pulling up like eight or nine layers of flooring, two subfloors, and it just seemed like it was never ending. It was funny because like each level of floor, we're like kind of trying to tell like, okay, what year was this put in? And so that ended up being more than we expected. We ended up building out the attic, which wasn't a part of our original budget, which was about a $12,000 to $15,000 add-on that we didn't plan on. But that one, when we went to sell, the big issue with that one was, aside from it, we budgeted like $90,000 to $100,000. Rehab ended up being about $125,000. The attic landscaping were kind of the two main reasons that we went over on that one. But what really got us was we're investors. So when we buy properties, we're using DSCR loans. So they're doing it based on income approach and they're looking at the property. Well, for 2 to 4 unit properties, people can buy them conventionally. And not every loan is going to use the income approach. So while we were looking at our numbers in our head, we were like, okay, as investors, income approach, we listed it for 560 under contract. We had multiple offers at and around 560. But the buyer that we had was buying it with conventional financing. and their lender, even though the income approach was close to our 560, they would not use it, and they'd only use comps, which came in right around 500,000. And we went back and forth. We fought with the lender, and they're like, sorry, like investment-wise, this is going to be done as comp. So that 60,000 really is what killed us on that one.
Wow, that's a really interesting lesson. I'm sorry that you went through that. No one wants to learn the painful way. But I think this is an important thing for our audience to pay attention to, because Lisa said that she used something called the DSCR loan, which stands for Debt Service Coverage Ratio. And this is a popular loan product for investors because it uses the potential income of the property to underwrite the loan. A conventional mortgage looks at the borrower and the borrower's individual creditworthiness and their ability to repay that loan. And so it sounds like there was sort of a mismatch where, Lisa, it sounds like you were using a DSCR and you said, hey, the rents can cover this 560 price. But when the buyer came along, their bank was underwriting them personally and it didn't line up. So what actually wound up happening? Did you have to drop the price there?
We did. We were at the option where we could have backed out and tried to find another buyer, but it was the duplex, so we still were always going to have the risk of it could be another buyer that was coming in with conventional financing. And mm-hmm. at that point, we wanted to sell. We wanted to pay back our private money lenders. And so we ended up losing about $10,000 on that, because we did drop the price to the $500,000. Because obviously the buyers, they're like, well, we don't want to pay $560. Our lender says that it's only worth $500.
So what do you do about that? Because that just seems like an unfortunate situation. But how do you prevent that in the future?
So for us, anytime we're doing any 2 to 4 unit property that we may sell, when we're looking at ARV, we're basing it on comps, not the income approach. So if the numbers work as the comparables and it looks good, awesome. And if an investor ends up buying it at the income approach, which is more, or potentially could be more, then that's a bonus for us. But we will definitely never buy a 2 to 4 unit where, if we're going to be doing major rehabs to it, we're going to make sure that we're always using comparables for our ARV and not the income approach.
This is a genius, smart lesson. Everyone should write this down. You've got to underwrite, especially 1 to 4 units, as a comps, the traditional comps approach. Now, there are some, I've learned that this can be market specific, because sometimes certain markets, I don't know if it's the appraisers that decide this, like did they have a meeting and go, all right, we're just going to evaluate everything 4 units on the income approach. Like, because here I found it's hit or miss. Some appraisers will appraise our multifamily properties on the income approach, and some absolutely will not. There's no standard for why they do or don't. And so you just have to understand that you don't control it. But what can you control? You can control how you underwrite your deal conservatively. And I think that that's the best, smartest approach.
Yes. Anytime we're talking to a lender where we know that we're either going to be selling or we're going to be refinancing after a rehab, we always ask them, will we be able to use income approach for our ARV? And again, like, we still make sure it works as comp, as comparables. But if we can find a lender that will use the income approach, then that's just a bonus for us.
Well, that's a great lesson that you're teaching everyone, Lisa. When you experience something like this, a deal doesn't go the way that you planned, how do you sort of take stock of what happened and make sure that it doesn't happen again, or you do at least everything that you can think of to try and get it to not happen again?
Yeah, this is definitely one we will not repeat. But after every deal we do, we always try and write down whether it went well or whether it went bad. We always try and write down what did we learn? What lessons did we learn? The good and the bad. You know, what relationships did we build during this? Did we find some great contractors? Did we find some great agents that brought buyers to us, but they also do multifamily that we could potentially buy deals off of? So we have it written down. We can review it, and we know in the future how that deal went.
This is brilliant. And it's something that, you know, we should probably do more often. But it's something that we do, or we did in the corporate world a lot, because I worked on software development projects. And so whenever a project ends, there's always a lessons learned meeting. And there's typically some template that you fill out that basically says, how did everything go? What went well? What didn't go well? And you have this documented in a formal document that kind of goes in with the project documentation. And so a pro tip for everybody could be, just go online and search for lessons learned project management document, and you will probably find tons of templates that you can use and just use them for your real estate deals.
I was going to say the same thing, Henry. Actually, this is just reminds me what we do here at Bigger Pockets internally. We have things we call them retrospectives, you know, like after a project is implemented, success, failure, whatever, you just have to take a look back and see what you can learn out of your experience. Especially when you're new, you know, every deal is going to be a learning experience. And the more you can write it down and periodically go back through them to remember those lessons, the better you're going to be.
I'm guessing, Lisa, that this is a practice that you brought to the table from your yes. analysis background.
Yes, most certainly. Paperwork and keeping track of things is not my husband's strength.
Can you tell us a little bit about like the specifics of what you look at? I mean, obviously, you probably look at how close you were to your underwriting, any variance between your underwriting and actual deal performance. So there's probably that sort of qualitative side, but or quantitative side, excuse me. But do you also just kind of talk it out and talk about some of the more operational or procedural things and how those went?
Oh, yeah, we definitely, there's always... No project's ever going to go perfect. So there's always things that even when a project goes well, there's still things that come up and that happen. So we always discuss, you know, as far as kind of start to finish, like how did the buy-in process go? Was there anything that came up in that that we can do better next time or learn from during the rehab? You know, timing contractors is always a difficult thing to do, making sure that you've got the people coming in when they need to and you don't have painters coming in when they still haven't finished what they needed to do, things like that. So we're always reviewing start to finish. And then even when it comes to the selling side of it, how did that go? How did the advertisements go? How much action do we get on it? Things like that. So we review start to finish pretty much everything.
And I should have asked you this earlier, Lisa, but do you always flip or do you hold on to some of these deals?
We hold. So our goal is always to hold. We look at it as whatever we buy, we're going to hold forever. Obviously, we sell properties. We just listed one for sale a couple of days ago, but we are definitely buy and hold investors. So we go into it with the expectation that whatever we have, we'll have for long term. So when we're doing our rehabs and our remodels, we're doing them as best of quality that we can do because we don't want to deal with maintenance down the road. So if there's something that we can do to make it better and make it last longer and be of higher quality, we're doing that.
Okay, we have to take one more quick break. We'll be right back with more from Lisa on how she makes her long-term rentals profitable and how she retains tenants right after the break. Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling that I locked my back door. How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from Simply Safe, I don't need to worry. Simply Safe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. Simply Safe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, Simply Safe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with Simply Safe's 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like Simply Safe. Calling all property owners and operators. Are you managing a multifamily property and looking to elevate your residents' living experience? Introducing Quantum Fiber Internet, your go-to choice for speedy internet your residents will love. The process is as seamless as Quantum Fiber service. Starting at just $50 a month, your residents can enjoy fast, reliable internet that will make them love where they live even more. Connect with your local fiber representative today. Learn more at q.com/gobig. I wonder how they got that domain. That's q.com/gobig. Limited availability. Service and rate in select locations only. Taxes and fees apply. 360 Wi-Fi and other equipment lease charges, taxes, and fees are excluded from price for life offer and may be increased. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Welcome back to the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast. We're here with investor Lisa Moore. Let's jump back in.
Yeah, along those lines, I would say, you know, people are hearing you're buying value add, you're buying older properties, and then you're holding them. So what are some of the things that you're doing both to the property or systematically that's allowing you to monetize these properties so well?
Definitely buying them for a deep discount so we know if the numbers will work. We also always are conservative with our underwriting, especially now. When we're underwriting, if they say, okay, rents could be $1,500 to $1,800 for this type of property, we're going to be on the conservative side. We're going to be closer to that $1,500 because if market shifts, if market changes and rents start to drop, we don't want to be stuck assuming we could rent this for $1,800 and now all that we can get is $1,500. And right now in Salt Lake, you know, this is the market that we know best, like the rents have dropped a little bit since last year. They're starting to recover a little bit, but you know, nothing drastic. They're kind of starting to level out. But when we're underwriting right now, whatever if the rents can be once stabilized, that is what we're basing whether we buy or not. I'm not building in, okay, well, if I can raise rents 5 to 10% in the next, like every year for the next 2 years, and then the numbers work, then I'll buy it. No, if once we have it rehabbed and stabilized at conservative rents, if it doesn't work, then we won't buy it. And if we can rent it for more than what we underwrote, then that's just a bonus for us.
Okay, so I have a follow-up question then, Lisa, because you, it sounds like you do these retrospectives or lessons learned on your flips. Do you periodically revisit how your long-term holds are performing?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I have multiple spreadsheets. And we actually, every year, we actually write like a year in review and we do meetings, you know, because we have LLCs. So also technically for the LLCs, we need annual meetings, but we review our properties every year as well and look and see, okay, how is it performing? Where is it at? Which is why one of our properties we're selling now. We have done multiple HELOCs against it, cash out refinances against it. We've kind of sucked everything out of it, but there's still a lot of equity left in it. So we know that we can sell it, take that equity and do more with it. So we're always reviewing the performance of our properties.
I love that. I feel like this is something that it took me a long time to get good at. And a lot of people forget about that. Investing is really all about resource allocation. And if you are buying and holding onto a property, you are putting a lot of time and money into it. And you need to be thinking about, like, is this the best use of my time? Is this the best use of my money right now? It sounds like most of your deals are doing well, but some of them, it's not a bad thing. It's usually a success. If a deal has run its course and you just no longer are, you know, you can put that money to better use, that's a good thing. But a lot of people I know just sort of buy stuff, hold on to it and try and get their next deal, but never go back and look at whether they should be holding on or refinancing or how to sort of maximize their existing portfolio.
Yeah. And where we've held some of our properties for several years in Salt Lake went crazy since 2020 with appreciation, you know, looking at return on equity, the one that we're selling and we're at like 1%. I was like, oh boy. Yeah. This one can do a lot more with the equity in it than that. So return on equity, once we've had a property for several years, is a metric that we look at and really kind of cash on cash is good when we first buy it. But once we've had something for several years, the return on equity is what we start to track and what we look at.
So that's great, Lisa. And I understand that, you know, one of the things that you really focus on in order to maximize the potential or the returns that you're getting from your buy and holds is tenant retention. So tell us how you approach that.
Yeah. So for us, like our tenants are our customers. If we don't have tenants that enjoy living at our places and don't enjoy us as landlords, then they're going to leave. And vacancy is so expensive. We try to avoid it at all costs. So, you know, we try and go at it like we want professional quality, but with a personal touch. So when it's time for renewals, we will do anniversary gifts for our tenants. So we'll offer them, hey, you know, if you renew your lease with us, we give them a list of options. And that could be having a cleaner come in for 2 to 3 hours, replacing a floor in one of the rooms, painting a room, painting an accent wall, things like that, that they help us maintain our property and give little upgrades to them, but it also gives them the choice because it's where they live. It's their home. So like we've had people, we've given them a list of options. She's like, I want a new light in the bathroom. And I was like, oh, never would have thought to put that one on there because it's a pretty new light. But the tenants really enjoy that they get some say in what improvements we do. And it helps keep tenants. We had a tenant that was getting ready to move out and we called them. And that's another thing. Like we literally pick up the phone and be like, hey, we've heard you may not be staying. Like, what's going on? Why are you looking to move? And this tenant was like, well, we have a dog and a young kid and we don't have a fully fenced yard. And we want to be able to like be outside hanging out and not worry about our kid or our dog running into the road. We're like, okay. So it was 3/4 fence. I'm like, so if we build the fence along the front, would you stay? They're like, absolutely. So for, you know, a short fence in the front yard, we just saved a tenant from moving out, made them happy, and now hopefully they'll stay with us for a few more years.
This is gold. This is what people need to hear. The first thing you said, I loved, and it's that our tenants are our customers. And I think that gets lost a lot of the time with new landlords or even the seasoned landlords. There's this almost superiority complex between property owners and their tenants. And then it creates this tension between, like, you aren't doing the things I want you to do as a tenant, and then you're not servicing your property as this landlord. And then there's this contention. But people don't realize that any of that contention costs the landlord money. But if you see your tenants as your customers, because this is a business, and any business, you provide a product or a service to a customer. And any good business provides a good quality product or a service to a customer who they provide great customer service to. And if you treat your business, if you approach your business from that mindset, then your relationship with your tenants becomes better because they can trust you that you're going to provide them safe, comfortable, clean place to stay. That's your good quality product or service. And then the better you treat them, the better your tenants treat your property and in turn treat you. And I think if we as landlords approach tenants as customers and people first, that we will have better long-standing relationships with our tenants, and that will make everybody else happy because you'll be getting your rents on time and you'll have tenants that want to stay for a long period of time.
Yeah, and we also get referrals from our tenants. So there is a period of time where we never had to list a unit for rent because the tenants in that property knew that they were, like, they became friends. They literally tore down the fence between, like, the neighbor's house and ours because they all hung out so much. So we didn't have to list our units for rent because they're like, one of our friends wants to move in. And, like, that speaks very highly, like, for them to refer somebody to move into our property. You know, we've had tenants that have been with us for years. One of our tenants has moved 3 times just to stay with us. She kept moving into the property that we ended up selling, but she's like, I want to stay with you guys. Like, do you have anything? And we fortunately always did, but a lot of our tenants have been with us 3, 4, 5+ years, which is awesome.
I love that. I have that at a triplex I own right now. There's a guy who's lived there for 6 years, I think. And he's basically just like the house dad. Yeah. Like, he just, like, brings in people. He throws parties on the back deck. He is always responsible. He's letting me know every time someone, something is happening with the house. He's like, I have a good property manager, but, like, having that extra layer of care, first of all, he cares about the property a lot, but he also cares about the other tenants, and it's amazing. And you only get that if you treat your tenants extremely well and value them as much as you value the property itself.
Yeah, definitely. We do as much as we can for our tenants. We try to be responsive, and we try and work with them. You know, if somebody can't pay rent, like, do we want to let somebody out of their lease early? No, but it also doesn't do any good to keep somebody in. You know, if somebody is getting to the point where they're having issues paying their rent, we talk to them. It's like, what's going on? And we've had situations where we had a tenant that had been with us and they were a good tenant. They're like, the boyfriend was a construction worker and he tore his ACL. He's like, I literally can't do my job anymore. He's like, we're like, this is our plan, our budget to get caught up on rent. We've already been applying for jobs. Like, by this date, we should be all caught up. And we're like, okay, like, as long as you can stick to those dates and you communicate with us if something changes, we'll work with you and let that go. But then we've had tenants that lost a job and they're like, we really have no idea, like, when we'd be able to get caught up. So in situations like that, we just talk and we're like, would you be willing to move out instead of, like, you can't pay rent. There's no point in us forcing you to stay and keep adding on fees because you can't pay.
Right.
So in situations like that, like, it's not ideal, but we'd much rather let them out of their lease and just let it be a clean break. We're not going to get money out of them. They can't afford it. And it's no good keep piling on and letting it get to an eviction point if they're willing to move out. And most of the time, they're grateful that we let them break the lease without thousands of dollars of fees. So we try and work with the tenants as much as we can in situations.
That's great. It's such a good approach, Lisa. I imagine that you've analyzed this and have seen that this actually is not just good for you, good for your tenants, but is also good for the bottom line.
Yes. Yeah. Vacancies are the biggest killer to our bottom line. So keeping tenants in, spending a few $100 at each turnover, that is well worth the money as opposed to a vacancy.
One of the things I've noticed when I was managing my own properties was that most tenants either are coming off of a bad landlord relationship or have had a bad landlord relationship in the past. And so I think a lot of them just have an expectation that it doesn't go well. And so one of the things that we always did was we just had a very casual, comfortable, level-setting conversation with the tenants when we would first have them sign the lease. And it was just something to say, hey, we are glad you're here. We want to rent to you. We want to make sure you have a safe, comfortable place to live. If something breaks, please let me know. We will fix it. That is my job. And the almost like relief people would have sometimes when we say these things is great, because it just lets them know, like, we actually care. We want you to have a comfortable place to live. Let us do our jobs. And it really is kind of helps set the tone for our tenant relationship going forward.
I love that, Henry. I do the exact same thing. I always just have this speech prepared where it's like, I just tell them, if they're reasonable, I'm going to be reasonable. And we're hopefully never going to have to look at the lease. Like when we're signing the lease, I'm like, there's all these legal stuff to protect both of us in case things go bad. But like, hopefully we never look at this and we could just treat each other like adults, like fellow human beings. And we're going to have a great relationship and make this work for both of us.
Yeah. And for us, it's similar, you know, and when a tenant's moving into a unit that they see is well-maintained and looks nice, like, you know, we keep our properties very nice. So we tell them, like, we care about the property. Like, this is our investment. This is our livelihood. And we don't want this property to become a slumlord property. We want to make sure it stays maintained. So please, like, if there are maintenance issues, anything that comes up, please make sure that you notify us, because we want this level of quality that you're moving into is what we want to keep it at.
Lisa, this is an excellent approach. It's obviously worked really well for you. And for everyone listening, if you want to take some notes or some pointers that you can apply to your own portfolio, some of the things that we talked about, first and foremost, treat your tenants like customers and make sure they are happy. Check in with your tenants a few months periodically, but also before renewal to make sure that they are intending to renew and see if there's anything that you can do to incentivize them to renew. And Lisa, is there anything else you think our audience should know?
Yeah, just be human with them, you know, be open to conversations. Don't be afraid of difficult conversations with your tenants and just treat them with respect and let them know that you are here to make sure that they are happy with where they live. And for us, we don't want to lose a tenant, but the only way we want to lose a tenant is because they're buying a house or moving out of state. So that's kind of what we tell them. Like, we want you to stay with us as long as possible, but these are the only two reasons we want to lose you as a tenant.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you again to Lisa for all the great information. If you want to learn more about Lisa and how she operates her business, you can look for that information in the show notes.
And don't forget, we have a special segment from Deal Machine for you now, where they're going to share 5 tips on finding motivated sellers. So you definitely want to check that out. For Bigger Pockets, my name is Dave Meyer. He's Henry Washington, and we'll see you guys soon.
Hey, Bigger Pockets listeners. Do you feel overwhelmed by the number of ways to find a motivated seller that wants to sell their house at a discount? Well, my name is David Lecko, and I created the software Deal Machine that's helped people close their very first real estate deal over 10,000 times in the past 7 years. So I know the biggest reason why people don't have success finding their deal quickly is because they hear about all the ways you could find deals. They try all of them, throw everything against the wall, see what sticks, but ultimately get burned out and spread their time and energy so thin, they haven't truly invested enough time into any certain strategy to finally get the result. So I'm going to break down the top 5 ways to find a motivated seller, and I'm going to give them to you in the order that you should approach them in. So if you're just starting out, the number one way is driving for dollars. Now, these are homes that are run down that you're going to drive around and look for and ultimately write down the contact info and then look up the owner and either door knock or reach out with mail or a text or cold call to see if they want an offer on their house. This is very helpful to them because these homes are in such disrepair. They wouldn't qualify for a normal buyer to come in and buy it with a loan. So if they need to sell their house quickly and you're the one they call, you could help them liquidate that within 30 days or less, which could be very helpful. And they're willing to give you a discount for that speed and convenience. A bonus is you get to learn your areas. And most really, really advanced investors may not be driving for dollars as much as you can, because they could just spend dollars to reach them in more expensive ways. But you can actually drive around, find these lists. You'll have less competition. The number two way is to look at tax delinquent properties. So the county actually publishes this, and you can also get it inside of the Deal Machine software. But in Indianapolis, there's a million residents and about 1,700 people that were tax delinquent in 2023 that had single family homes. So I reached out, and it turned out there was somebody in Utah who bought 5 investment properties 2 years ago, but he hadn't had any success getting a contractor to actually fix it up. So he's kind of pulling his hair out, sold it to me, one of those properties, for $20,000 less than he paid for it. Plus he paid for the back taxes. So I was able to do a deal, help him out. And then I even recommended my contractor if he wanted to try that for some of his future deals. So great scenario where a high earner still took a loss on that property just to get rid of it. So this is a great motivated list, and it's free to get as well from the county. Number three is liens. So that's homeowners that maybe didn't pay their, you know, contractor to remodel their bathroom. And the contractor is saying, well, even though you didn't pay me, you can't sell that house unless giving me a portion of it first. So means they're in some type of financial trouble. This can be a great list to actually pull and get motivated sellers and help them out of a tough situation that they might be in. There's many types of liens. It could be maybe they didn't pay their federal taxes. Maybe their homeowners association needs them to pay dues. So those are two examples. The third thing is code violations. So this means that somebody maybe hasn't cut their grass and the city had to do it for them to keep the environment safe for their neighbors. And that's not cheap. Could cost $400 to cut a small lawn. So those bills add up. And if they're not taking care of their property, it means it's not rented out. They have a renter that's not cutting it, or they're just not paying attention. So this could be a great way for you to just unload a problem property for them and typically get a great price for that. The fourth way is pre-foreclosures. Again, all these lists are free, provided by your county in some type of format. Pre-foreclosure means they've actually not paid their mortgage payment. And in some states, that means they have 30 days before it's auctioned off after missing just one payment. Crazy, I know. So you could get the list in the courthouse. Often they're posted to a bulletin board. And then you could actually drive, reverse drive for dollars. So it means you go to all those properties, knock on the door and say, "Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know you're on this list and we could help you save your credit. But most importantly, we could give you peace of mind that you can take money away and have a place to live instead of wondering, when is my house going to be auctioned? Will I be able to stay here next week?" And so you can give them that certainty by driving around and seeing if they want to sell their house. And then the fifth one is probate. So that's if the owner has died with no will. Oftentimes these types of properties, they're going to be owned by the kids that have, 4 kids, and maybe they don't want to deal with a rental property or can't agree on what to do with it. So you can reach out and actually do those deals. And I give you these lists in this order because the simplest is, of course, driving for dollars when the owner's still living. And that's a list that you can find just by getting out there and looking. So you'll learn your area. That's the very first one. And the next ones are all free lists you can get from your county if you know where to look. And of course, we provide this all in the Deal Machine app as well. You can try a free 7-day trial of Deal Machine and get this information for no cost by going to dealmachine.com/BP. And of course, check out the Deal Machine podcast to hear all 25 ways that I've put together to expand this list and give you guys all the info on finding motivated sellers.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.